I have a colleague at Calvin who tells the story of a high school teacher that she had 30 years ago or so. This high school teacher taught science. And in science, the science lab where this high school class happened was a room that had no windows. And the high school science teacher 30 years ago would always start class by asking the question, "Tell me what the sky is like today." Well, for the first month of the school year, you know, the question would be asked, and the kids had absolutely nothing to say. They had no memory. And, of course, the teacher was pretty savvy, right? No windows. You just couldn't look outside and choose to come up with an answer. But after, you know, 3-4 weeks of the school year, actually the kids knew that they had to look ahead of time to be able to describe the sky to the science teacher. So one of them would say, "Oh, today there are big, billowy, towering clouds." And the next day, thin, wispy little clouds. This being Michigan, eventually it would be, "God has pulled the great wool blanket over the state of Michigan for the entirety of the winter." Yeah, right. I was so grateful to see that sunshine this morning. Oh. She tells that, and she says, you know, 30 years later, I still pay attention to what the sky looks like every day. Right. Every day, God paints this enormously beautiful picture in the sky. And what my teacher taught me in high school was just to pay attention. Just to pay attention. Well, I think this is an interesting little thought experiment. And I'd like to take just a minute and think now. The teacher did that through a question. So let's think about setting a worship committee or worship team or worship group, I don't know, whatever it's called in your context, a meeting agenda. And after opening with prayer with this group, what question could you pose to that group which would help that group think retrospectively about shared worship experiences that you've had in your congregation since your last meeting? What is the habit-forming question you would want to ask? Now, I'll give you one example of a question that I think is not, I'll just say it, not fully exemplary, but is in fact the implicit agenda of most worship committees. And it would be, the implicit question, even if it's not explicitly, is the question, what has annoyed us as we have worshiped together over the past month? Right. And the discussion will go up to the sound system that didn't work quite right, to the heating duct that came into the church I was in some years ago, where all of a sudden over the sound system, we all of a sudden got 107.3 FM radio being broadcast. It was a memorable moment in worship, actually. But you know how worship committee and worship team discussions can often be at sort of at that level. So let's set that aside. What can we come up with right here in the room? Do not be bashful. What question would you want this group to ask together? A habit-forming, perception-shaping question. Go ahead.
What did worship inspire our people to do when they left the building?
What did worship inspire our people to do when they left the building? Thank you.
What helped or hindered your encounter with God?
What helped or hindered your encounter with God? I love that. Because you notice how the question embeds, both questions, embed a certain criteria for evaluating worship, right? It is not the question, what music did you happen to like? Which is a question that just reinforces kind of preference talk. This is great. Other examples that come to mind.
How did we help our people prepare to meet with God?
How did we help our people prepare to meet with God? Right. Great. Shift right from that now and think about the third grade Sunday school class. Right. What question could you ask in the third grade Sunday school class about a worship service they had just experienced? What question would you ask? Okay, what color was on the altar? Okay, good. Slight variation. Did you notice anything new about the way the church looked today? The variation on that. Okay. Other questions? Is it harder for this age group? Go ahead.
And most kids, would, the question that would come up with the answer would be, who sat by you?
Who sat by you? Beautiful. So it's interesting, with that, those two questions, which I think are great, but notice how those questions are more about tangible, concrete things, right? You can see the color. You can think about the person that you sat next to. And I think, actually, that's we ought to put pedagogical lesson number one out of this. Ought to be, we want to ask questions that pay attention to the tangible, the quotidian, another word for everyday, the messy, these things that are concrete. It's interesting, the questions we came up with just now for the worship team were questions about intangibles. What music, or what helped you or hindered you meet with God? That's a much more intangible thing. Actually, these are great illustrations. As we continue, one of the things I'm interested in probing together, and I'm really genuinely asking the question. We are all at the edge of our expertise, and this is where mine is going to run out, okay? But is the question, how can we integrate those two kinds of questions so that we never set aside the tangible, the artistic, the way that melodies, colors, other people, things we can see, touch, and feel, we should never set that aside, right? God works in and through these things. But we're interested in the connection between these things we touch and feel and the intangibles. Any thoughts about how we can connect? Does that make sense? We want to connect them? It almost feels to me like, you know, when you get binoculars up to your eyes, you ever have this seeing double thing that goes on? You can't actually get them to form one picture. Right. And what, I think what we're going to want as we continue to go forward are to think about how tangible things and intangible things come together. The root of the sacramental discussion. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So our attention at the Lord's Supper or baptism is partly to the water, the cup, the bread, right? But it's also to the action of God's Spirit, which is nourishing us through these things. And we miss, we do need both of those to fuse. Touch and handle things unseen.
Sort of just wondering, should we broaden our sacramental vocabulary to more than just these few things?
Should we broaden our sacramental category to include those just few things? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in fact, actually, in most sacramental theologies, right, back to the early church, baptism and the Lord's Supper, especially through a Protestant lens, were viewed as unique, biblically mandated actions. But the category sacramental was most often used early on, with a small s, to refer to things that include the Lord's Supper and baptism, but also other things. Right. Yeah, absolutely. John Calvin, actually, in his commentary, Institutes of the Christian Religion, Book 4, talks about the rainbow that Noah saw as a small s sacrament. Kind of interesting. He just viewed this in a much larger category. I think actually it gets brought right down to church life for 8-year-olds. In actually, this is where I want to push. Would we dare to ask 8-year-olds both questions? Both the question, who did you sit next to in church? And what was the color on the altar or the table today? But also the question, who blessed you spiritually today? Now that's an intangible. In the first 5 times that you answer, ask that question, you might get utter blank looks. What does that mean? Until you provide a sample answer. Right? And kids can begin to overhear adults answer that question. I was so blessed spiritually because so-and-so who had been in the hospital for 6 weeks with cancer was back at church today, and we could greet her, and her presence blessed me spiritually. You know, kids hear about three or four answers like that to that question, they'll be able to answer that question. And now, all of a sudden, kids' attention is framed on both the tangible but also the intangible. It's just kind of intuition that I'd like to push together a little bit further.
I used to take a preschool class at our church, and combining the color and the teaching or the experience, and I talked about, you know, what's outside growing today, grass and things. Then we go into church and see the green, and say, now we're here to, the green reminds us we're seeing the growing and learning of God.
Yep.
And try to tie in the color to something that they can relate to. And it has to be a teaching moment to the color.
Kind of an everyday and Sunday too move that's there. Absolutely. Yeah. Which is, yeah, and that's working the both sides that we're after. Great. Great. Okay, let me quick finish up the few comments yet on page 3. I think it's where we left off in the handout, just briefly, and then we're gonna switch gears and talk about the Christian Year Summit. Number 13. We're paying attention, obviously, in these 2 days to that which prepares and teaches and forms us for deep participation worship. But it's also important to pay attention to experiences that thwart or undo participation or formation for worship. There are 1,000 things that can be a barrier to worship, and even retrospectively misshape formation for worship. A breach of trust with a preacher or a worship leader. A subsequent comment that undermines our confidence in what we've learned. 1,000 things that can undo positive and good formation. And so I always want to be a little aware of that shadow side that can happen too. And be... kids can be, this happens, I'm afraid, in some high school youth groups, right? Where kids, let's say they've been in a congregation and their parents have read to them Gail Ramshaw, and they're thoughtful Christian camp counselors led them in beautiful gestures at campfires, and they've been formed in this beautiful covenantal understanding of worship. They've been given a vocabulary to articulate the doctrine of the Trinity. I mean, it's
the perfect kids. Right? Perfect kids.
Right. And then all of a sudden, they show up at a high school youth group, and somebody says, none of that matters.
Right.
All of that is just church talk.
Right.
We don't want church talk here. We want to get real.
Right.
And being real, and then, okay, right. So I just, and this can happen in 1,000 settings, in 1,000 areas of life, and I want to make sure we're talking in very realistic terms as we continue about these things. Okay, and then number 14, and then we're going to switch to the Christian Year. The more I've thought about this, the more I've thought about how we need to pay attention to common experiences that are really important to worship, but often that we do not pause to name. So, there are 1,000 books we could probably name together off the IWS bibliography about the nature of music and worship. But I'd have to think long and hard about many that pause to name what is a fundamental working assumption behind every congregational song ever sung, which is simply listed here. The challenge for worshipers to mean the words that someone else chooses. Isn't that just kind of pretty fundamental? That actually, we don't often talk about it, but I mean, the song goes on the screen, we open a book, we sing from the book, and we all kind of all assume we're singing these songs because we kind of mean them, which means participation worship is partly an act of alignment, right? It's partly inside, something in me says, I am trying to align myself with these words. Well, I don't know about you, but just naming that raises all kinds of problems and challenges. how many Sundays there is no energy inside of me for that inner act of alignment of the will. There is the inner act of aligning the lips to move in the direction suggested by the words, right? There is the act of aligning my vocal cords so they will phonate in such a way that I will at least growl out the melody that's been intended. So it's all up here, and it's here, but that little internal act of alignment doesn't happen. But then I pause to think, has anyone ever talked to me about that? Has anyone ever paused to say, what happens when you get a song and you say to yourself, I don't think I mean this? What do you do when there's just that internal tension? So anyway, there's something about just naming these very fundamental acts, including, last one listed here, the poignancy of, and I'll name the other side of it, the positive view, the poignancy of wandering minds and thoughts, and the way that wandering minds and thoughts can be, in fact, an arena for the Holy Spirit's work. I think when I was growing up, I was formed to think of wandering minds. And that was pretty, not such a good thing. That's right, not such a good thing, right? Paying attention was a good thing, right? Well, I think actually paying attention is a good thing. But sometimes paying attention to the wandering mind is a good thing. And sometimes God does something through the wandering mind that is remarkable. Here'd be a question for the minivan on the way home. In what way did God bless you today through things that you were thinking about during worship that had nothing to do with what was going on? I hope by these questions that we are keeping this real, grounded in the reality of in fact, how we experience things. Okay. This session one handout we're going to likely come back to, right? There's actually most of a little doctoral seminar in this one page here. And beyond this, the initial questions are some more theoretical constructs, and I look forward to coming back to that. But now I'd like to actually move on to the Christian year.